To the final case this morning, U.S. v. Pittman.
May it please the court, counsel, Dan Hansmeyer on behalf of Tony Pittman. Apparently there is a limitless supply of Fair Sentencing Act appeals. This is another one. I'm not going to talk about that, obviously. The other issues I raised have to do with a second count, a 922G count. There may be some agreement between the parties on what this court should do with that, based on the concurrent sentence doctrine. Essentially, we would concur that this court can apply the concurrent sentence doctrine if count one is vacated for any reason, whether a judicial remedy or a legislative remedy. I think if that can be done, it makes sense not to address the issues. And I think that has some support in this court's sentencing package case law. And essentially, this court has said, you know, when a sentence is unbundled, it can be repackaged. And the government makes a valid point that count two is based on count one. If count one goes away, the district court should be able to resentence on count two. If that is the agreement, you know, if that's what this court understands, if that's what the government understands, that makes sense. And at some point, if count one is vacated, then the judge can resentence on count two. To the extent I need to go farther on the merits of the issues, it's really the second issue, sort of relevant, I guess. The other two issues are derivative, although the substantive reasonableness isn't necessarily derivative. I mean, a sentence can be unreasonable even if it's within the range. And this may be a case where that the presumption would go away because the range is based on a mandatory minimum on another count. But putting that aside, on the second issue, just briefly, there is no conflict in the circuits. I don't know if I duped the government into thinking there was. There's this Fifth Circuit case cited by the Ninth Circuit where the ultimate resolution appears to be in conflict with what the Ninth Circuit and the D.C. circuits have done. But that case has nothing to do. There's no discussion of the interplay between 5G1.2 or 5G1.1. The only two circuits that have addressed that interplay, the issue we raise on appeal, agree with us that the court, because this is a multi-count conviction case, you go to 5G1.2b, you don't go to 5G1.1. With respect to the count that carries a mandatory minimum, the except clause of 5G1.2 excludes that count from the application of 5G1.2, so you have to impose a mandatory minimum on that count. But with respect to the count where the mandatory minimum does not apply, the total punishment under 5G1.2 is still determined by the guidelines calculation. I really have nothing else to say on that. That's exactly what the Ninth Circuit and the D.C. circuits have held. No other court of appeals has disagreed. We think it is inherently right based on the language in the statute.
Mr. Hansmeyer, is that problem a problem like this where you've got this linkage?
Yeah.
Has that come up in any of the 3582C2 crack cases from a few years ago? Did you come across any?
I have no idea. There's one attorney in our office that did all those. I have to ask him. It wasn't me. That's a good question, though. It's a really good question. And I don't know the answer. I mean, I guess in that instance, maybe it isn't particularly relevant because even a 3582 motion, you can only go down to the mandatory minimum. So, like, if Mr. Pittman had, you know, if he had gotten 15 years on the front end, came back on a 3582, he could only go to 10.
But
right.
No,
so you still get 10.
Because when you had cooperating or safety valve defendants,
okay,
you can still have that. But
maybe
I haven't figured out whether there are such cases yet or not either.
Yeah.
So
maybe a cooperator where there is no mandatory minimum. Yeah, I mean, that would probably be the case.
Okay.
But I don't know if it exists or what happened in it. But I mean, I do know that the probation office is not doing this consistently. I had a Fair Sentencing Act appeal, a different one, where the PSR was correct. I noted it in the reply brief. So we didn't object to it because there was nothing to object to. I don't know if it's something worth writing about to clarify. I mean, certainly if you agree with me, I would have no problem with that. But if you disagree with me, I would hate to create a circuit split when you don't need to address the issue. So if there are no further questions, I will yield my time retroactively to the guy before me.
Thank you.
Tough act to follow. We agree, so I don't have much to say. Judge Hamilton, I can look into the 3582C cases. I agree that it's probably not going to come up very often. I actually think that these cases where you have a mandatory minimum drug case and a collateral gun charge, not a 924C, is unusual.
Just so that we understand, would it make sense from your point of view for us? Mr. Pittman's not going anywhere in a hurry anyway. Right. Would it make sense for us simply to hold this case and wait and see what the Supreme Court does with the Fair Sentencing Act issue?
You're certainly welcome to do that. I think the alternative would be, I'm sure that on the Fair Sentencing Act, Mr. Hansmeier will petition for cert. That will hold the case then before the Supreme Court. And should it then be remanded if they reverse the Fisher decision in this court, then it will be remanded to this court, and when you send it back, it would be sent back for resentencing for the package. That's what I think will take care of it. If you want to hold the case, I don't see that anyone would object. Certainly the government does not object to that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of moving your docket, I don't know that that would be necessary because the consequences will be the same.
There's a concept long ago known as benign neglect in certain public policies. So, mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is there a need to clarify for this circuit's purposes which of these guidelines is appropriate to apply in this situation?
You know, there actually may be a need, but I don't think this is the case to do it. You're going to spend a lot of time on figuring out what the right course of action is for a case in which you're ultimately going to decide on plain error, and I think that it's a close enough, questionable enough issue that where this defendant agreed, actually, in a sense, sought this sentence, very difficult for this court to then exercise its discretion and say, gee, this is a miscarriage of justice. Now, Mr. Hansmeier is correct that there's an inter-district conflict. One probation officer has come up with a different tabulation for the gun case in a comparable situation. And so it may come up to this court in a riper fashion, and you'll have that opportunity. So if you would care to devote the time and energy to it, then maybe there's some value in clarification. But it doesn't come up very often, and I don't think this is the case in which you ought to do it because you're not going to overcome the – I don't think you're going to find that this is plainly erroneous, the district court. Defendant didn't object. A miscarriage of justice –
got a lot of procedural impediments here.
Right. Very well.
Thank you very much, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess.